This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our guest is from Connecticut, Vivian Shipley, and she's here with an opening poem.
For the unnamed woman in a photograph at the New Haven Colony Historical Society. Fixing dinner fit for a preacher, there's no slow syrup hours on Sunday for you. It's not Pulaski County, Kentucky, but Fairhaven, Connecticut. Exchange squirrels, hog feet, and brains for your fish and clams. You'd be my Grandma Todd in an apron trimmed with rickrack, bent over a soapstone sink, holding strainer and knives. Spare times for fixin'. Rockin' while a stove heats to red, your fingers have to be busy shucking raw oysters in pans set on a square table, or turning collars until pots of water fog the windows. Like my grandpa, who took off for the cow barn before dawn, tomorrow your husband will be out with first light. Squirming like an eel out of water, morning he smells for stench from low tide before it turns. You'd like to pan-fry a mess of dough for his lunch pail, but all he wants is mackerel as he storms at you to dock your nonsense. Shake a leg, or overtime will be paid to its boat's crew. Sleep only widens the space between hours that are tweezed of pleasure, of friends that will not be given back to you on this earth. If you did not corset days with work, what would you do? Nets to mend piled by the door keep you inside. There's no way for you to pull yourself from the catch your husband takes from the Quinnipiac River, any more than the lobsters struggling on the mud-caked linoleum can save themselves from your boiling pan.
That is the voice of Vivian Shipley from Pulaski County, Kentucky, and she's here with us. She is now the Connecticut State University Distinguished Professor and editor of the Connecticut Review from Southern Connecticut State University, and one of the finest narrative voices in this country. Vivian is known throughout the states for her hard-hitting book. And what is this new title?
This is Hard Boot.
What does it mean?
Well, in Kentucky, a hard boot is known on racetracks all over the world, I suppose. A jockey who's a hard boot or a worker on a racetrack is known to only belong to Kentucky. It's like old boots that conform only to one foot. So
boots
are people who only conform to one state, who belong to one state, Kentucky, and they take that identity with them everywhere.
And you have, and my husband said, now, hard boot, could that be a computer term, or it must have to do with a shoe? So now we know. Vivian Shipley is here. We're at the Library of Congress, and we're going to be hearing a lot from her work, because Hard Boot has just won another award. And I must say that Vivian has written some, I figured 12 books and chapbooks of poetry. And so Hard Boot is the seventh book. And this is just out, Southern Louisiana State University Press.
So it's okay. SLU.
Oh, right.
It's
Let's have one more poem before we talk about the book.
Friday Tea. Opening the manuscript vault at the Elizabethan Club, Yale University. Afraid I'll sneeze, I won't touch a first folio of Shakespeare offered by Beinecke Library's curator. Should I explore, is an academic question, of course, the purity in Elizabethan speech of people confined to Appalachian cricks and hollers. Leaving Kentucky for New Haven, I knew my syllables would unwind, spill to entangle and mark me like a blue ribbon stuck on the prize pig at a state fair. Trying to forget the lope of my accent like a pink shawl crocheted by my Aunt Hazel, I deliberately left on a chair. I shortened vowels, pulling at imaginary strings with my tongue, extended diphthongs with a tuck of my jawbone. Still, like signals from men trapped in Harlan County mines, there were words clawing in me. In the club library, I watch a man drink Earl Grey tea, his little finger a comma, and I think of my Uncle Paul, with a soft rag of voice, but no nobleman's British accent, who was so polite he held a cup to his lips to catch tobacco juice instead of spitting. I want to hear the hillbilly in my voice, reclaim parcels of my life that I needed to keep tied. A real gosh darn it, this afternoon I might say a sittin' and a rockin' without explaining that the use of the A prefix strictly before verbs ending in ing turns out to be consistent in mountain dialect. As I describe that old woman stumbling up that there hill with a poke and a pig walking right behind her, my father saying, "Let me ride behind you on that one," meaning save me the sure bet. All the Elizabethan members surely will circle me in the garden to hear a fur piece, no ready-mades, a handed-down story, young'uns, tomorrow at sunrise. If I don't lose my audience while reading my new poem about our outhouse, using an old Sears Roebuck catalog for toilet paper, maybe just one Lizzie will cry out, "Forevermore."
Vivian Shipley, we're at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. I was going to ask you what you wanted people to know about your poetry, or what you would like the listeners to understand about your work, but I think now they know. After that poem, there's no further explanation. Would you agree?
Well, I think the poem is an attempt in my part to put parts of my life together. I grew up in Kentucky, spending a lot of time in the country with my grandparents, my parents. And when I came to New Haven over 40 years ago, I tried to hide my identity, my accent. And I finally learned the importance and the beauty of my heritage and have learned to embrace it.
But
and
there
so
is
my
something.
Poetry is a journey in that way.
It is a journey. But what I love that you've added to it is that the anti-hero. You have a little bit in your poetry of the Charlie Chaplin, where you are being very distinguished and winning all these awards. I think I counted 49 of them today. And yet you keep this sense that you could still trip over the log near the fireplace. And it is a wonderful quality in your poetry. Well, people love it.
In fact, Grace, funny that you should mention the word trip. I've always had a good sense of humor about myself because I trip a lot. The first day I started teaching at Southern Connecticut State University, which was in 1969, I'd just come from Vanderbilt, fresh with a PhD, thinking I was really hot stuff. My first class, I fell coming in the door, tripped and spilled all my books, falling on the floor. And so everybody was like laughing, and I looked up at them from the floor and said, "Hi, I'm your teacher." So that remains with me.
Well, we get that in your book because it is like a movie. Your life is really like a movie. And I think that you were just wired with words when you were born, don't you think?
Well, my mother claims that I started talking when I was 8 months old, and I haven't stopped since then. So people have prayed I'd lose my voice, but no way.
And in this year and this world where no one writes letters anymore, you still carry on an epistolary relationship. When I get a letter from you, it's 5 pages. It's about the lab dog. It's about shrubbery. It's about the things of this world. Writers write.
Well, I enjoy writing letters. As I said, I went to Vanderbilt. I've got a PhD in Victorian literature. And I think perhaps that's where the letter writer in me comes from. But letter writing is one of the great pleasures of my life. And making friendships, such as one I have with you, through letters, even though we never have met one another, you feel as if you're sharing your life with others and have a sense of communication.
Vivian Shipley, let's have a poem.
I didn't start writing poetry until I was 31 years old. I'd gotten a PhD, as I said, and I had a traumatic experience. I gave birth to my second son, discovered I had a huge brain tumor, and almost died. So after I did live and recover, I began writing poetry. So this next poem is about the experience with the brain tumor, which took me quite some time to actually be able to write about. It's called When Your Number's Up. Rocking on the front porch with eyes closed to feel late sun, my grandmother preached to her congregation of dogs, cats, and chickens. The hairs of your head are numbered. I pictured her hands, fingers layered between knuckles and thumbs, twiddling like blades of a real mower, cutting hay, as the barber shaved my head with an electric razor. piling around me like stacks of wheat before it is gathered and tied, embroils the harvesters. My hair was red, then gold in the air as it dropped. "Way too pretty to throw away," the orderly said, as he gathered it in a sack for me to keep. The night before the meningioma was removed, I had to translate the medical word for brain tumor to my kin as they circled around me. Holding hands while they sang hymns, their trust was in the mighty fortress of God, not the surgeon. Folding my fingers into my palms, index finger and thumbs pointed to heaven, I used to play, "Here's the church, here's the steeple, open the door, and here's the people." During the operation, my hands were strapped down. I couldn't pray without them. I lived, I could add. Emptying the bag I brought from Gaylord Hospital, I counted each strand of hair on my bed, told myself, "Hustle, ink your lucky number on your arm. Go to Lighthouse Deli, buy a fistful of Quick Pick Daily Lotto, play four and Powerball."
Vivian Shipley, she is the author of Hard Boot, which we're talking about, Gleanings, When There Is No Shore, Down of Hawk, Fishing Poems, Echo and Anger Still. And her poetry is made up of units of energy. I call her work Spirit as Ground, Ground as Spirit. She writes about very down-home things, but they really take on laughter, energy, and all the things that make us vastly human. I think you've probably heard that before.
I have, and I'm very complimented by it. Much of my work appears to be autobiographical, and normally the kernel of emotion in it that stimulates a poem is. But much of the work that I've done is fictional. In other words, the incidents, the details in it are fiction. I've written many fishing poems, for instance, and I've never caught a fish in my life. I happen to be terrified of worms. But I do try to unite the heart and mind when I write, and the conflict that is created between the two often might be what will arouse me to write a poem.
And I often tell my students, it's all fiction but the feeling. You know, that's
so true.
That's the only thing that cannot be fiction.
That's so
it can
true.
Be with a novelist, but with a poet, we cannot make up that feeling. And let's have some more.
Voices became a dominant theme throughout my work once my own voice was almost silenced, and I started in my own life to learn how many things besides radical illness, death, could silence you. I had three sons, and while I was trying to raise them and work full-time, I found mainly I was exhausted, and my voice was, in a sense, silenced, the writing, the time to do it. I often felt with Sylvia Plath that perhaps it was the exhaustion that she experienced with the two children in the coldest winter in Britain that led, you know, ultimately to her suicide. But I'd like to read a poem entitled, "How Many Stones Weighted Virginia Woolf's Pockets." Mm. A bather rising from Long Island Sound, dripping breast. It has taken me a long time to surface through gutted chickens, shucked corn, carrot scrapings, bean husk, and potato peels. To have no sons, dogs, cat, house, or garden still seems natural. It's a shock to find how far gone life is, how widely I have drifted. A body that could not stay shut. My job description read birth, with veins breaking to feather the back of my knees in crimson. Yellowed sweater stretched tight over my stomach. It was not just my life that weighted me like a split shot crimped on my fishing line. In Kim, I learned why I shouldn't bite lead sinkers with my teeth, but not to avoid habits that seeped in, hardening to mold all the life I could hold. Milk rings, cereal bowls to rinse. Waiting for oatmeal as I bent over to brush the underside of my hair, all three sons sat impatient. To get my attention, one swallowed a penny on a bet with his brother. My voice rose, a hand swatting flies, shut up like my desire, swarmed inside the Jackson press over the peach cobbler, left over from supper, and beat their wings against its doors.
We're at the Library of Congress with Vivian Shipley, and she has just been awarded something from Connecticut, and it is in tribute to her contribution to the world of literature, fostering an interest in books, writing, and reading throughout the state, and advocating for Connecticut's literary heritage. Is that the Connecticut Prize? There was one in 2003.
I won the Connecticut Book Prize from the Center for the Book, which is housed here in the Library of Congress. Connecticut has a chapter in the Hartford Public Library. Most states have chapters with Connecticut, with the Center for the Book. It's a major national treasure, basically.
But this is new.
So I won the Poetry Prize in 2003 for When There Is No Shore, but this is a prize for my contribution to the literary heritage of our state. Wally Lamb, the novelist, won it last year.
And it's called the Lifetime Achievement Award for Service. I think service awards are something to be especially proud of because it means that we're spreading the light.
Well, Hilda, I have to tell you that I had an old pound dog. I've told this story to Hilda Ross, who's a friend of mine from Prairie Schooner, and we had an old hound dog named Goldie who'd sit out underneath a tree with her mouth open, sure that if she sat there long enough, a squirrel was going to drop. So this goes to show, if you keep your mouth open long enough, something good's going to fall into it.
It did. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we're going to go on. Are you reading from Gleanings now?
I am.
Okay.
After having children, I also experienced a divorce, which was very devastating, and then formed a new family. And so I'd like to read a poem about my husband, now of 25 years, who took on me and the responsibility of three small boys. So it's called The Stepfather Speaks. Do years add layers as silt does, filtering down through a river, flowing quietly, sure of its direction, as we have been for 14 years. There was no ritual for becoming a family when I married your mother. Our three last names stayed separate, were not blended into one word we could stencil on the mailbox. I did not understand your mother's anger at the years she could not erase by removing monograms from silver, by changing your initials to her own. At times her rage was a fire, scorching all ground around us. Peace like the dandelions we dug out year after year, jagged spears of green spreading out to yellow carpets, crept in, pushing back the blackness farther and farther. One day it was faint, a ring surrounding us, and then it was memory. Because it is easy, the metaphor of planting comes readily. So common, but I can't think of another comparison that would not be contrived, that would be natural for a stepfather's love that is not. What I did not seed, I can harvest. The earth has been deeded to me. Yet, as I stand at Sachem Field, waiting behind the soccer post, I sometimes fall silent, not screaming out yes, as other fathers do when their sons score a goal. Another man's name broadcast over the PA system slaps my ears. At the fall sports banquet, after being picked all-conference and MVP, you called me up to the podium. While we stood posing for the North Haven Post, need to see my name engraved on my son for a plaque I mounted in the hall, fell from my heart. With no words in our vocabulary for blood, own, or real, we each grasped a handle. There was no step or hyphen labeling love bridging us, the trophy we shared.
Vivian Shipley, the basic soundness of your life makes your poetry trustworthy. They're experiences that we trust, and that makes us feel that the poem is true. So do you teach your students that is the approach to poetry?
Yes. What I do is I do a lot of research, Grace, so that the details of my work, even if I haven't had the experience myself, that the details are accurate. If I do poems about fishing, I will have really read, researched fishing and attitudes and emotions of people who actually do it. And then I gather those into myself and try to write about them.
You had me fooled. I thought you were a fisher person.
Wrong.
And okay, now were you lying about the shrubbery too?
No, the shrubbery is true. I grew up in the farm, love to get my feet in dirt, so I've moved some trees 10 or 15 times. I found it very therapeutic.
And it's also in the work. I think Gleanings won a Patterson Prize.
Yes, it did.
And that was an achievement award.
It's for a lifetime achievement, also the Patterson Prize. I shared that with Martin Estada. This is given by Maria Gillen from the Patterson Literary Review, the Patterson Poetry Center, and also she's the director of SUNY Binghamton Creative Writing. And so I'm very grateful for that, for the acknowledgement. I won it for an individual book earlier, but this was for lifetime achievement.
2004.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember that, actually. Well, we have here a woman who is a distinguished professor at Southern Connecticut State University and also the editor of the Connecticut Review. And that brings me to the question of how much a presenter can present and still maintain the poetry in her heart, because I know by the time we write blurbs, by the time we review other people's books, by the time we teach, by the time we do letters of recommendation, sometimes you feel like I'm marketing fertilizer instead of light. I mean, marketing is marketing. And don't you sometimes just have to take a deep breath and go hide?
Yes, but probably writing my poems is my way of hiding. I find that writing poetry is a fairly lonely experience, and it's also very personally preoccupying. And so that I find that my roles of a teacher, of an editor, get me out into the world and let me help other people or involve myself with other people. And so that I do feel much better about my self-absorption when I write. I would find it probably very difficult to only write and not have a life where I'm privileged to be able to help others.
Well, that's a very good balance, since life is a balance. And I bet you get up at 5 o'clock like I do to write.
I had been, but now I'm somehow sleeping later. I don't know. I'm hoping I'll start getting back up at 5.
It works. Here's Vivian.
This is a poem that I did write about fishing, taking my son fishing. It's called Soon, Soon. My son would whisper as I pictured netting dark, not our bait darting into tide pool moss. Twilight was best, with shadows crossing and uncrossing like legs of cheerleaders seated on bleachers at a home game. Brushing sand lice from my knees and thighs, I'd lecture to myself, there's a limit. Our insurance against lures, Matthew scooped Kelly's into a pickle jar. But fearing for his thumb, I hooked them onto his rod. I turned away from the bluefish struck, knowing what I would have to do, that my son was still too young to handle a knife. My fingers wrestling its insides, guts over my wrist, I was grateful no sun gleamed in the fish's eyes. Rubbing my index finger's knuckle under my nose, a habit I couldn't break, I would inhale the smell for days, like squid left to dry that curl and stick to the deck. Scales of the fish I cleaned fell to silver. Staying put through winter, washed by spring rain, scales glittered on asphalt, rolled as if on the bluefish's flesh, leaping off the hook to forgive, to resurrect my hands.
The poet is Vivian Shipley. We're at the Library of Congress. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri.